Hey there, and thanks for venturing beyond the Rotunda, a Farmingdale Public Library podcast where we will often talk about literature, history, and community, but sometimes we'll discuss things like, do you eat to live or live to eat? I am your narrator, Kevin Schultz. Let's dish this one out. This is episode 5 of the Beyond the Rotunda podcast, a production of the Farmingdale Public Library, where we are more than just books. And today we will be visiting with Farmingdale's own superstar chef, Eric Levine. And that is E-R-I-C-L-E-V-I-N-E. Chef Eric is the managing partner at 317 Main Street Restaurant right here in Farmingdale. Plus, he was the 2011 Food Network's Chopped Champion. He has 4 cookbooks to his name. And back in November, he completed the New York City Marathon for the first time. And we will discuss all of that and a bunch more in just a little bit. But first, let's check out our cover question. And this time I did something a little different. I reached out on social media in advance to get your responses to the question, do you eat to live or live to eat? And before we get to your responses, I'll give you my own. I would say that I am an eat-to-live guy, somewhat. I'm not a foodie. I'm not a big snacker. I do not get huge cravings. But I also am not very health conscious when it comes to my food. I do not eat gluten-free. I'm not vegan. I'm not even non-dairy, although my lactose intolerance is constantly screaming at me, stop it! But I ignore it and I forge on. What I do try to do is eat in moderation. However, there are some foods like pizza and ravioli where I fail miserably when it comes down to moderation. And that's why I have that love-hate relationship with my lactose intolerance. I love those foods and my lactose intolerance hates me for it. When it comes down to it, I eat when I'm hungry. And generally speaking, that's twice a day. And that's why I say I eat to live. So that's what's in my book. Now let's find out what's in yours. We have Krista from Farmingdale who says, are you kidding me with this question? Of course I live to eat. I love food. Now that was pretty straightforward and to the point. We have Marcia from Islandia, who says she eats to live. Now more than ever, she understands that we are what we eat, and so she intentionally tries to prepare nutrient-dense foods. But, she says, taste is still important, so herbs and spices are a must. And Marcia, I'm right there with you. Christopher from Whitestone, New York, says he eats to live. As a diabetic, he strives to eat healthy, clean, portion-controlled foods that are low in sugars, trans fats, and sodium. And Chris, I wish you continued good luck. And finally, we have Laura from Plainview, who says it really does depend on the day and the meal. She does try to eat to live, but mostly she lives to eat, especially when she's at a restaurant like 317 Main Street that has such an amazing menu and a welcoming atmosphere. Bring on the food. Laura, I'm right there with you. And I thank everyone for writing in and giving your opinions. And if you want to give your opinions on this question and any other question we've had, please email me at beyondtherotunda@farmingdalelibrary.org. And now we can turn the page to our interview with Chef Eric Levine, where we discussed his culinary philosophy, as well as what he believes to be the ultimate holiday feast. Enjoy! We are here with Chef Eric Levine from 317 Main Street Restaurant right here in Farmingdale. And Chef Eric has won countless awards, including Restaurant Guild's International Chef of the Year twice, Creative Caterer of the Year, and Chef of the Year in the same year, and Best Chef on Long Island for 2023 and 2024. Chef Eric,
That's great.
welcome and thanks for venturing beyond the rotunda.
How are you today?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Cannot complain. Getting ready for Thanksgiving and yeah, I'm super excited.
Big time of the year for you.
Yeah, well, so you know what? Every day is a big day. You know, every day is a new day. Every day is a day one. And yeah, so we're just rocking and rolling, doing our thing, and glad to be here.
Glad to have you. I want to start by asking you, though, with all the awards and accolades you have received, which also includes a CHOP championship, which could you say was the most satisfying?
Well, you know, all the awards are interesting, and they all have their place and time, so all different. I would say the thing that I just received was the coolest, which was finishing the New York Marathon. So my medal, that was probably out of all the things that I've been able to accomplish, that may have been the best thing of my life
Right.
outside of meeting my soulmate. That I think that's probably the coolest thing. But award-wise, I don't know. You know what? It's all about the team. Like, you know, winning 23 and 24 Chef of the Year, Best Chef Long Island, that's all about my team. That's really just the equivalent of all the effort that they put in. And you know, I guide them, I nurture them, I teach them, I train them, I maintain them, I push them. But you know, the awards, any award that I've ever won has really been more about the team than about me. It's not an individual. I mean, though it may be classified as an individual award. Yeah, none of it is about me. It's all about the team and about
Right.
what we do together as a team and what we achieve as a team. Because no chef worth his skin in the game is an island on his own unless he has a private dining room that he just cooks himself. Which there are
Right.
plenty of people who do that and do little pop-ups and stuff, but this is a team effort. On everything, on every level, dining room, kitchen, partners, marketing, everything that we do, and every business that we've been part of it. That's, you know, the chef ego is dead these days. You know, there's no reason for it. You just kind of rock and roll and do your thing.
Sounds good. Makes sense.
You know, all good stuff. All good stuff.
So one of the things we like to do here is I'd like to give the opportunity to our guests to answer our cover question. And the cover question is something I do at the beginning of each episode, which is like a thought-provoking conversation starter. And so our cover question today is simply, do you eat to live or live to eat?
Do I live to eat or eat to live? Well, that's a double-edged question because you have to eat to sustain. But if I didn't have to eat all day, I'd be okay with that because
Right.
I love the eating process, if that makes any sense. Like I love creating. And I love trying new things and I love trying old things. And I love trying to, you know, go to a restaurant and if I find a dish that I think is incredible, I look at it and I appreciate it and I love it and I walk away. There are times where I've gone to plenty of restaurants that I'm like, okay, that was good enough, but what could have made it better? And how can I learn from that? Everything's a learning opportunity if you look at it from that perspective. So I live to eat new and creative and fun.
Oh, I like that.
That's where my head is at and my heart is at because you know you could go to any restaurant in the world, you could eat fast food or whatever, you know what you're going to get, but when you have those experiences, right, that's the difference maker, that's the separator in life where you can have an experience. And I went to this little place by my house in Sayville, this little it's called Brunch Sayville,
All right.
little spot. And the food's phenomenal, and the vibe is fun and funky and quirky. But it's such a great place. It's like my, you know, Deb and I go there on Mondays to have brunch, to have breakfast, and you know, a great cup of coffee with some great food. And the energy and the vibe in there is great. But it's a small, it's smaller than my office at times, you know, in certain
Right.
spots, or as small as my. But the energy and the vibe and the food there is it's great. You know, so when I find a place that we enjoy, and you know, we'll go back time and time again, and it's never the same. In the sense of, it's always great, but it's never like boring. They make a
Right.
breakfast sausage, but they do a different breakfast sausage every day. And it's cool because it's all homemade and it's all really good, and it's the service, and again, it's the coffee is great. Everything's just great. And when you find a place like that, to me, you could go to a million times. It's kind of like 317. You could find so many options here and so many variables. You'll never get bored. You'll never, by the time you think you got through the menu, I'm springing a whole new menu on you. So I get to change menus monthly, which is great. Yeah, as a
Right.
chef owner, it's great to have that, the creative process. And it's, for me, it's a fun place to cook, and operate, and we do a lot of different things here. So as a chef, as a cook, it's never ending. I just dropped my fourth cookbook, Forkin' Good,
Yep.
which is available on
We're gonna get to all that. We're gonna get to all
But all good
that.
stuff, but it's all literally, it's like all good stuff. It's like,
I can hear the excitement in your voice when it comes down to talking about food.
I love it. It's just, listen, there was a point that I was 356 pounds. Now I'm 168, but I ate a lot of
Wow.
food. I ate the wrong food, but I ate a lot of food. Now I eat food differently. And I really learned to adjust what I'm eating and how I'm eating it. And, it comes through in what I do on a daily basis. And there are times where we all have moments of like grabbing the garbage, and that's when my body reacts in a negative way.
Right.
But you learn how to eat differently, for sure. That's for sure.
Well, that healthy approach that you're talking about coincides with your recent endeavor to run the New York City Marathon, which you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, it
Now,
was.
correct me if I'm wrong, though, you did that to honor your brother?
Yeah, so I was running with a group called Team and Training. It was for we were running for the Lymphoma Leukemia Society. I was running in honor of my little brother, or memory of my little brother who had passed away from cancer. I'm a cancer survivor, and my little brother passed away from cancer, I think it was 3 years ago, and it will be 3 years in April.
Okay.
And he was an amazing kid. He was a yogi. Now I get it. Now I understand what he meant by mind consciousness. Or no mind consciousness, because I delve deeper into it. I wish I would have done that then, because I would have understood him a little bit better.
Right.
But just a really a brave soul to his dying breath. I mean, he fought with love. He was excited about sharing the universe, and so I ran for him, and I ran to raise money, and I raised 13 grand here, and as a group, we raised over, I think, 1.25 or 1.26 million.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, for Leukemia Lymphoma Society. And being a cancer survivor and beating a cancer that was terminal, you kind of take that information and digest it, and then you use that for something great, right? So running the
Right.
marathon, 3 years ago, it was kind of funny. November 3rd, 2021, life changing, and from there, 3 years later, dropped 186 pounds, completely different lifestyle. And what better way to celebrate than run the New York Marathon?
Yeah.
It was great. It was a challenge. I blew out my left knee at mile 13.
Oh boy.
I pulled my groin at mile 16. So for the final 10 miles, it was a run, walk, shuffle. So I wasn't going for time. I was going to raise the money, but I'm going to have my knee replaced hopefully in January. And then I could start training again for the marathon for 2025. And I will cut my time way down, because
Right.
I came over the finish line, they put the medal on, and my body kind of collapsed. I was in hypothermia,
Sure.
so they had to rush me into the medical tent and then put me under some heated blankets. And it was an adventure. It was an adventure for sure, but it's something that will always stick with me. And next time I will do better, and I will raise more money, and I will continue to do it in honor of memory of my brother. We lost customer here who came here all the time with the parents to cooking classes like a month before, Colleen, and so I kind of ran for her and her memory, and for my buddy Vinoy, who's a good friend of mine, a chef in Ohio. Him and I met on the set of Sushi Master, and he's been battling cancer, so it was an honor of him as well. And you got to put the good stuff out there and the good vibes out there, and hope that everyone comes along for the ride. And you can't change people if you can't change yourself, right?
Right.
It's a journey. It's the never-ending journey. And That's why I always tell people I'm the dumbest one in the room. I want to be around the smartest people so I can learn and absorb and grow from and really I know nothing. At 55 years old, I don't know a damn thing. So,
Right.
it was great to be able to come to that point in life and that conclusion that you have so much more to learn. And I'm doing this since I'm 11 years old, so 44 years, and I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I'm still evolving, and I'm still trying to be better.
Well, first of all, my condolences on the loss of your brother.
Thank you.
I lost my mother, Patricia, 8 years ago to after a 17-year battle with cancer.
God bless.
And she was always the strongest woman I have ever known. So I'm still, I'm still following in her footsteps, at least trying to. So I understand where you're at. And congratulations on the marathon and how determined you are to finish it. That was amazing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you never know what you could do. And there were a couple of moments that I was texting Deb along the way, and I was like, babe, I can't move. I'm done. Like, I literally in so much, I've never felt pain like this. And she's like, okay, one step at a time. Even if you get done at midnight, I'll be there at the finish line.
Yep.
That kept me going, right? Just the positive,
That
I knew
support.
I could do it. Yeah, I knew I could do it. I just needed someone else to tell me that. Sometimes you just need that little push, and
Right.
she's my massive push. And you just do it and you find your way through it. So the last 800 meters, I ran as hard as I could, and she videotaped me coming towards the finish line. And I didn't hear all the people hooting and hollering and cheering and what have you. All I kept on thinking was get past it. And I was in, ex I've never felt pain like that. My knee and my groin were just like on fire. I was like, what? I'm almost there. I'm almost there. I'm not dead yet. I'm almost there. Just find a way through it. And yeah, but you never understand truly what your body could do when you put your mind first, right? You block out the pain. You block out whatever it is that your body's saying, okay, you're done. No, I'm not done yet. As long as I have the energy to walk and I'm not dead, I'm crossing that finish line. And I did. And it's like now, it's 3 weeks later, and I'm still high from it. I'm still on the emotional roller
I can
coaster.
hear it.
Yeah, it was really like, it was life changing. Like, a really, boy, it's you against you out there. And there were moments, like, I was going on the 59th Street Bridge, there was nobody on the bridge but me. And it was the most like silent, weirdest, most lucidic vibe I've ever felt in my life. And here I was, I'm in pain, but I'm doing it. And I didn't get to the final pain yet, because when I came off the ramp of the 59th Street Bridge is when I pulled the groin at mile 16, and I was in pain, but I was like, all right, we got this. We're gonna, all right, look at the scape, look at the vision from here, look at the vibe. You hear the silent hum of the bridge, like just the vibration, and you don't even need to, like, you could just go based off the energy over the bridge. And
You never know where to get that motivation from.
yeah, oh no, 100%. Listen, I find inspiration in weird places, but the motivation was like, all right, the bridge was talking to me. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but it was like talking to me. Okay, go, just go. So I did. And then the crowds in every borough were just magical. I mean, like, you talk about New York City being the greatest melting pot in the world. Man, that was proof positive. Because every community that I ran through, it didn't matter. No, this was what America's about. It didn't matter anyone's religion, their color, their sexual preference. None of that mattered. We were all New Yorkers. And I felt like because there was music everywhere. There were DJs on corners in every borough, people cheering you on. You had all these volunteers and offering you water and Gatorade and medical assistance. It was just like a big community party, and you were the star, and everybody wanted you to finish. And how could you disappoint? So when I got off the bridge and I pulled the groin, there was a whole group of people up Second Avenue, First Avenue, whatever it was, and how could I not run through it? Like, they're giving their energy, they're giving their time. How disrespectful
You'd be
would I
disappointing
be?
them, right?
Yeah, like, and a friend of mine who was running it also said, make sure you put your name on your shirt, so when you're running, people scream your name. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Now I get it. And no one ever told me that everything in New York is uphill. All went uphill.
Right.
Everything, other than coming off the bottom of that bridge, everything was uphill. And as soon as you think you're done, no, there's another hill we're going to throw at you. There's another bridge we're going to throw at you. And there was one point with Manhattan. There's a bridge that goes from the Bronx to Manhattan. I forget what it's called. Starts with an M. I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
There were people on the bridge that had a sign that said, "Last Damn Bridge." And they were all up there. It was so much fun. They were like, "Hey, we got pretzels. We got water. We got shots of vodka if you need." And I was like, "Ah, vodka, just give me some pretzels. I'll be good to go." But what an experience. Wow. Like, I'm an adrenaline junkie anyhow. I love the challenge of being challenged. And that was a challenge. Like I talked to her every, she's my girl. We live together, but I talk about this all the time with her. Like, I want her to do it with me because it was such an amazing experience. I want her to share in that. She's like, I'm
Right.
not a runner. I'm like, she by trade is a dancer. And I'm like, you could do it. She's like, I hate running. I'm like, yeah, but we do it together. I kind of do love running now. So I'm hoping to get the knee replaced as soon as I can, so I can get back on the out there and start running again, because man, it is, I can't, it's so hard to explain. And I've done a couple of interviews about the race, about the run at 55 and losing the weight and my journey on that. It's still like, I know it's 3 weeks ago, but feels like it was this morning. The memory will always be there. The medal that I got at the end was so heavy. I was like, wow, look at this, is a piece of metal right here. And like, man, it was just, what a great experience. People are amazing. As bad as we see the negative stuff in this world, man, the great side of humanity was out there in every community. Like in the Bronx were great. Every Dominican and Puerto Rican part of that section, they were out there dancing, giving high fives, running with me. It was just great. It was like that energy, man. And just different parts of Manhattan you're running through, and the DJs all over the place, and people are just cheering you on. And as the night came, because I was in the last gate, I was at the 11:30 a.m. gate, and hurt myself, which made the day longer. Sun started setting. I didn't think people would be out there. And there are pockets of people all over the place cheering you on. Even at the end, you get to Central Park and they're like, "All right, you're almost there." You're not. Well, first of all, you're not almost there.
Right.
You still got 2.5 miles to go. So that's a fallacy. So whoever says it to me next, yeah, punched in the throat. But I was running through the park, and there was very few people at that time because, due to my injury, I was in the last group.
Right.
And you come around and you just try to get to the Central Park, I guess, south, and then you go out and you come up west side, and there's no one there, and you just like, you start to get in your head like, "Oh wait, oh, is that the end? Nope, it's not. Shit. All right, another turn, another hill, another hill, another hill." You're like, "Wait, oh wait, there's this easy route to go this way." And they're like, "Yeah, somebody tried actually going down the wrong side." He's like, "No, sir, you can't cheat. That's the wrong way." Biscuits. Like, I could have gone that way. But I would have been cheating myself. But it was a great experience because, you get there and that last 800 meters, there's nobody. It's like desolate, and you're just like a guy in the park running, and it was like, am I even in the right place? And then you hear the finish line music and the people there, and you're like, oh, okay, there it is. I'm like, all right, now I gotta run hard because I gotta, But Deb videotaped me running, and I watch it, and it's like me doing a little, 90-year-old man run shuffle.
Right.
I just wanted to get past that finish line, and man, what an experience. But that, like, another feather in the cap of life, right? Like, there's so much more that I want to do. And marathon, doing it the right way. I mean, but even getting to the marathon, you get on a ferry with all these people from all over the world. I was by myself. I don't know anybody, but I love being around people I don't know. Because I say hello. Hey, how you doing? You're your first one. And I make conversation. There's some people who are like, "All right, dude, just relax, calm down, it's a run." But I was like excited, and yeah, it truly was like, from the moment I got there, I was on the bus from the ferry to the holding area, and I was sitting next to this guy who's from Italy, and he's a lawyer. I just found all this out by sitting next to him and asking questions. And then he turns and he's like, "You look familiar." He's like, "Do you do TV?" And I was like, "You watch Food Network?" He's like, "Yeah, I've seen you on that." And he goes, "But I saw you somewhere else." And I had just done Fox and Friends like that previous week. He's like,
Right.
"Were you at a box of friends doing something?" I'm like, "Yes, I was." He was like, "That's so cool. I get to sit in there." I'm like, "Tell me about you. I don't care about me." And we started talking about food, and he was a big foodie. Like, he was telling me about it. He loves this restaurant and that restaurant. And then he told me about this restaurant that we both happened to have gone to that we both didn't like. And he goes, "Would you have you been here?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "I thought the place was horrible." Like, I'm not going to bang on another chef's place, but I'm not saying you're wrong. He's like, "I don't get it. How could this guy get a Michelin star?" But blah, blah, blah. I'm like, "Listen, I don't know nothing. All I know is that I want my customers to be happy, my staff to be happy, and I want to run this race in the best way I can."
Right.
And it was just great to meet people and like be in that community of like all these runners. And now I'm a runner, right? I never called
Yep.
myself until that day. And it was just a beautiful, peaceful, crazy nightmare experience. Like every emotion you could find in the world wrapped up into one ball. And that's where it was for me. That's where really, like, I didn't understand what I was getting myself into until I finished. I was like, wow. Now
Well,
it's like, yeah.
your enthusiasm is making me think maybe I'll join you next year. I
All
don't
right, let's go. Let's go.
know.
We can raise money together.
Yeah. But let's move on to your forte, which is food and cooking.
Yes.
What was the catalyst that piqued your interest into becoming a chef?
I think my first job at Jan's in Brooklyn, I was like 11 years old, and the excitement of it, the insanity of it, the fire, the screaming, the yelling, the alcohol, this is back in the day, the drugs. It was like home, you know. It was like the insanity, the chaos, and I grew up in chaos, and I find, I don't know, even to today, I love chaos. I can control it better, but yeah, it was just the chaos of it. And we grew up on food stamps, and we didn't have a lot, so I was getting free food. Cool. All right, all the ice cream I could eat. Cool. So here I was in a food place driven by insane people. It was just it was ins it just the insanity of it. It was beautiful. It was like, again, chaos. So that's where I think I developed it. And then I think, and before that, I had some my stepmother. We used to go to some restaurants in the city, in the village, and I think I was 6 years old, 7 years old. I had my first experience with pesto and angel hair pasta. And to this day, whenever I make pesto, it has to be that same taste and vibe, or else it's not good enough. So that's, I guess, the one of the areas I could thank my stepmom for, because she introduced me to another world of food, and it just blew up from there. So I even had my first cookbook, which I got for Christmas when I was 6 or 7 years old, which was the Mickey Mouse cookbook, Disney cookbook. And the first thing I made out of the book was Goofy's chocolate mousse. Remember, it was like yesterday. I made a complete mess, and my dad was like, "Don't make a mess." And of course, I made a mess.
You were six, of course.
Yeah, so that was a great experience. But you know what it is? The food business is so diverse. And such a beautiful thing. And you really have to have an interesting perspective of life to be able to thrive in this business. Like, it is the greatest thing in the universe, and it can be the biggest monster. I have plenty of friends who, drug addicts, alcoholics, you name it, they're doing it. And unfortunately, you can't be normal and be in this industry. Like, you have to be one wave short of a shipwreck. Like, you have to enjoy a pirate life, because it's not normal. And I don't care who you are, there is something really wrong with you to love this business, myself included. But you have to find the passion and love for it, because if not, it's just going to kill you from the inside. Then you'll do the things that are bad instead of doing the positive stuff, like fundraising and training and teaching and growing and evolving your business. And it takes all kinds. I mean, here at 317, we have lots of partners, and we have lots of people involved in the business, but everyone plays a role, right? Everyone plays their part in it, and as a chef and partner, there are different things that I'm responsible for. So it's not just cooking. There are times where I gotta wash a toilet, clean a toilet. Sometimes you gotta do that. My guys are like, "Well, why are you doing it?" I'm like, "Because you didn't, so I'm doing it." It's like paper on the floor. Like, you walk past something or you leave it a mess, that's as much your fault as it is the person who left the mess. And hold yourself to a higher standard. Just because you didn't make the mess doesn't mean you can't fix the mess, right? If you see it, fix it. If you feel it, fix it. If it's obvious to you, make an adjustment. But you got to want to, right? You got to believe in it. You got to believe in what you're doing. So yeah, lots of opportunities come up in life, and you evolve, or else you stay the same. And whoever wants to be the same, I don't ever subscribe to that same, what, different day. I'm all
Right.
about, like, it's just like, no, it's not. It's not the same thing, different day. It's a new thing, a new day. Every day is day one. It's like getting started every day. It doesn't matter. It's like people going on a diet. Oh, I'll start the new year. Well, let's start now.
Right.
That's why you'll always be that person, because you'll wait until the time is right. I do a program, a Live a Lifestyle, called 75 Hard. That's a lifestyle. It's a year cycle, and it's the most amazing thing, but it's trained me to think about everything that I'm doing. That's one of the things that got me through the marathon and the training part of the marathon, which was living this lifestyle and not waiting for something to happen, but going out and doing it and making a difference. It's easy to point fingers and to make excuses, but what if you just started? Just start. You don't have to be perfect. Just start. Who cares where you wind up? Just start. You can't get anywhere if you don't start, right?
Exactly.
I tell my kids all the time, like, you got to start today. It's the old cliche of, you're not guaranteed tomorrow. And I've lived that life where I just waited and hoped that something would change. No one's coming to save you. Certainly not the government on any side. And so you have to be able to take care of you and the people that you love and the people around you. And then you could do right for other people. It's easy to do the wrong thing. It's easy to try to get away with something. It's easy to try to, X, Y, and Z it. But when you have integrity and you live a certain lifestyle with that, success is inevitable.
It's an amazing philosophy.
It's easy, right?
It sounds like it. It
It's
should be.
really easy, but people have to apply that, right? It's easy to want someone to do it for you, but how much better are you when you do the work? Then you don't have to rely on anybody.
Right.
Doesn't matter what you do, what line of work you're in, where you are in life. At 55, I never thought I'm going to run a marathon. I honestly, for my long longest time in my the longest time, I had said, if I live past 55, I'll be surprised. It was my trajectory, is where I was. It was my mindset. Now I want to live forever. I
Right.
want to do more. I might have the most amazing life. I may not be rich in money, but no one is richer than I in everything else. Like, I have the most amazing relationship, the most amazing life, and I get to do what I love. How many people say that, right?
Yeah.
I'm not 9 to 5. I'm sunrise to sunset, whatever, whatever. I get to do a lot of things that I'm grateful. I'm grateful every day for what I have, between doing TV and the restaurants and, other projects and cookbooks, and it's a blessing. I don't take anything for granted, ever. Not anymore.
Well, like I said, that's an amazing philosophy. And speaking of philosophy, how would you describe your culinary philosophy?
It runs a range, but mostly, I think the culinary philosophy is keeping it simple, working with great products, and executing it in a forward-thinking manner. It doesn't matter if it's a burger. Make sure the lettuce and the tomato and the bun are great. It doesn't matter if it's foie gras and lobster. Make sure you're sourcing it right, and the quality of what you're doing and how you're treating it is right. It's like, any piece of vegetable. Like, you can make anything great from anything if you treat it right. A carrot, as simple as it is, as a vegetable, can be done in 1,000 different ways and applications. So if you treat it with respect and you treat it with love, and you look, as a cook for so many years, I could tell the outcome before I even make the dish, just because it's like, it's my sixth sense, right? I
Wow.
know how it's going to be before it even gets put on the, into the kitchen. So using that and understanding it, you run with balance and seasonality and flavor and texture. But I think if you keep it simple and keep it honest in that way, I think you'll have the most success.
What would you say is your favorite ingredient to work with?
My favorite ingredient to work with, gosh, that's a tough one, because there's so many beautiful ones. There's so many things to work with. It's hard. It's just like, it's seasonal. It really is seasonal.
Makes
because, you know,
sense.
yeah, when you run into every season, you find little gems, little pieces, and little nuances that really make the season pop. So when you're using that seasonality, that's the greatest ingredient. There's no one specific thing. Like, I don't capitulate to anything, but, you know, salt is important for everything.
Right.
People make that mistake. They don't season their food. I don't get it, but and tasting your food, that's another thing. But yeah, your palate is your biggest weapon and the biggest thing. But salt is the biggest, most important ingredient.
My wife would agree with you. What is the weirdest thing you've ever been asked to prepare for someone?
No one's asked me for anything weird. What I've done weird things. I had a customer who said, I want to do a chef's table and I want you to be as creative and as weird as you want.
Okay.
Here's my black MX. Whatever you want, order from wherever you need. So I found this farm that sells lion steaks. And
Wow.
he used a lion tenderloin for his one of the dishes for his meal. So that was the most interesting
Yeah.
thing I had to play with, because it's kind of like pork, chicken, veal in one, but so
Okay.
tender, very, very little fat to it, so you got to cook it properly. That was probably the, I mean, I've eaten weird. I mean, I've had the monkey brains, pig eyes, you know, like just scorpion, you know, just whatever,
Wow.
rattlesnake. You try everything once, right? The worst thing I've ever had was probably the 100-year-old egg. Got it from an Asian market. Oh
Wow.
yeah, one and done.
That just sounds bad in
Yeah,
the
yep. And it's as bad, it's worse than it sounds. I mean, the funky smell off of that, just weird. Yeah, I wouldn't
Wow.
do that again. I can smell it right now. I got goosebumps.
So you touched on it earlier. You have written four cookbooks.
Yes.
So I'd like to go through each one and maybe you give us like the book jacket summary of each.
Sure. So,
So
the new one?
let's start from the beginning.
Start from the beginning. Okay. So, back in 2008, I wrote my 2008 or 2010. 2010. I wrote my first cookbook called Stick It, Spoon It, Put It in a Glass.
Right.
That cookbook was kind of a mindset of taking three ingredients and showcasing them three different ways. So, in a spoon, in a glass, on a stick. So, everything three different ways. And that was probably the hardest book to write, because it was my first. And I was started being the son of a photographer, I wanted to do my own photography. But I didn't
Okay.
understand the balance of shooting food in real time and the time that it takes to properly shoot. So I had to bring a buddy, this guy's name is Lou Manna, photographer, amazing food photographer. We brought him in. And the book came out great. You know, it was really geared towards the restaurant chef or the catering chef, not towards the public cook. And, you know, so people would buy it because they'd come to my restaurants in Jersey and buy it. And they'd be like, what is, you know, calcium chloride? What is, you know, agar? You know, because I used some molecular gastronomy in it. And, you know, the chefs got it. Some of them did, some of them didn't, but the
Right.
home cook didn't. So that was in a nutshell, you know, the hardest book. Then I wrote Small Bites, Big Flavors.
Right.
That was a really fun cookbook because I used theoretically the same concept by doing things in threes, you know, three recipes of the same, using the item in three ways. And that was really geared towards the home cook. So my old PR girl really helped me hone it into the home cook. So I'd write the recipe and she's like, what does this mean? And I'm like, what do you mean? It's a half pan. She's like, yeah, people don't know what a half pan is at home. I'm like,
Right.
ah. So I learned a lot of valuable lessons in that. And that was a lot of fun, that book. Got to do a good book tour with that all over the country and did some real good PR and really met some amazing people. So it was a fun, that was a fun cookbook. The last cookbook, Burgers, Bowls, and Jars, that again was like, that was broken into seasonality. So different burgers, different styles, and, you know, between, you know, shrimp burgers and lamb burgers and turkey burgers and
Right.
beef burgers. and then going into anything that could be a bowl, whether it's a pasta or a ramen noodle, different types of grains, and then jars, cocktails, and desserts. So that was a lot of fun. That I brought in someone to help me with the design and element. That was the first time I did that. She did a great job. And then I brought my buddy Tony in to do the photography. I only did a couple of pictures on the book, and he did a wonderful job and really designed. You know, the design element was a collaboration, and it was great. And Tony was involved in the first in small bites as well as burgers, bowls, and jars.
Nice.
And the new book is called Forkin' Good.
Nice.
And it's available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. And that book is really geared towards the home cook, but how I'm cooking now. So it was broken out to different sections and different segments, and it's a lot of fun. And I did all the photography on it, except for the pictures that were taken of me. That was done by my buddy Mo, who's a photographer from Jersey.
Okay.
And truly like inspirational and truly like great to see the evolution of my cooking and how I do it now. So I'm already planning the fifth cookbook and working on an autobiography as well. So that's coming up. You know, that'll be a 20. The autobiography, I'm hoping 2025. The next book probably 2026. It all depends on where things go. And you know, there's lots of opportunities, lots of ways to do things. And I love sharing in the art of it, and I love sharing in the insanity of it. It's really like kind of what I do.
I look forward to those two new ones coming out. Do you have a name for the autobiography?
Yeah, it's gonna be called King of the Misfit Toys.
Nice.
Was it's perfect for that, you know. Yeah, so it's kind of like one of those things that just makes sense.
Right. So let's talk about 317 Main Street now.
Yeah, so 317 Main Street. We've been open 5 years. It's an American gastro pub. We got Best American Restaurant in 2023. So that's really cool. And the team's been evolving, and we got so many different things going on and so many nuances to what we do. And whether it's the food, whether it's the cocktails, whether it's the service, the live music, the events that we do, the cooking classes, the movie nights, the so many different things that we do are like next level. And we have fun with it. It constantly evolves and it constantly grows. And you know, our packages that we do that. So 317 Main Street. So it's a gastro pub. We have lots of events. You know, our brunch is insane. We do special wine dinners and cooking classes. We have a chef's table here for 6 to 8 people where I do a private dining experience. 6 course, 10 course, 15 course, 20 course, depends on the group. But it's never anything that's on our menu. It's always things that I bring in from the outside. So this way, it's another level of creative that we offer. But lots of cooking class, like I said, you know, it's all in line for what we are. It's an American gastro pub. It's a little bit of everything, you know, and we constantly all, you know, offer new things, new ideas, holidays. You know, Thanksgiving, we're busy. You know, we do these takeout packages that are the value for price paid are amazing. But truly, it's like it's a very family focused, very local neighborhood focused restaurant. But we get so many people from some all over Long Island. It's really a beautiful thing. Yeah, it's great. It's a great place. I mean, I love it. It's my happy place.
Well, why Farmingdale?
So I had restaurants in Jersey, and one of my childhood friends, Dom, who is one of my partners, they had just bought the Naughty Irishman. And I was going to do some work with them, but you
Right.
know, didn't work out. And then this space became available. And I was like, all right, let me check it out. I checked it out, and I could see from the moment I walked in what this could be. And just understand there was almost nothing, barely a roof. The original floor was a five and dime and nothing else. It was just a raw space, like down to the studs of the walls. It was cinder block. That's it. So, you know, my partners and I created the vision here, and each light bulb, each everything was really carefully thought out and how we wanted to do it, instead of bringing a designer in capable of doing that after all these years. And we had a good synergy with it. And you know, you compromise, and some colors you like, some colors you don't. And at the end of the day, it worked out to be perfect. It's like
Right.
the perfect restaurant on so many levels. So we have an open kitchen, which is great. Customers love that. They love coming up to the window and talking food and sitting at the table. And there's so much that goes on here. It's just a great space. It really is.
All right, so here's a scenario. A new customer walks in to 317. What do you recommend they order first? Like, what's your signature dish?
Oof, that's a hard one because every dish is different, every person is different. So I never, I try to get a vibe from them, what they like, and then I'm able to kind of guide them. But I give them choices because when we first opened up, a customer said, "Hey, whatever the chef wants to send, I'll eat." Well, I sent out our scallop dish, sends it back, and I'm like, "What happened?" "Oh, he doesn't like scallops." I'm like, "Okay." So I go out to the table, I put it down, and go, "Sir, here, enjoy your scallops." Because I don't like scallops. I go, "You said chef's choice. That was my choice." "Yeah, but I don't like it." And I go, "Well, I want to be 6 foot 8 too, but I don't see that happening either."
Right.
Enjoy yourself, you know. But I've got a different palate. But there's so many dishes on the menu that I love. There's nothing that I don't, like I said, they're all my children. I love them and hate them all at the same time. And it's and our burgers are great. Our taco. It's like so hard to choose one over the other. When I get to play with the specials, that creates a whole other level of fun and interesting and texture and flavor. We have this one dish on that's like a peasant dish, but it's an amazing dish. It's this pork ragu that we serve with a Parmesan polenta and an olive tapenade. And it's just an amazing dish, but so simple. Like, it's
Right.
just one of the dishes that unless you try it, you don't know how great it is. And if I didn't eat the way I eat, I'd eat that every day, all day. It's such a good dish. But then you get like our risottos. I mean, our risottos, I'll put ours against anyone. It's just doing it right. The flavors, the textures, the combinations, and just beautiful. It's a beautiful space to
I
be.
enjoy the risotto.
Hey.
Yeah. So you touched on this. You guys do a lot of like fun, family-friendly events. What do you have going
Yeah.
on for the holidays?
So we're doing a movie night, fork and film type my night, dine in movie. We're doing Elf. So we're,
Nice.
throughout the movie, we're using different foods that are in the, we'll take a lot, a tagline like smiling is my favorite. So we did these little smiling potato croquettes, these happy faces. And then we dip, we serve it with a cheddar dip. They talk about Ray's pizza. And at Ray's Pizza, everyone says they got the best pizza, but Ray has 50 pizzerias all over New York, all claiming to be the best. So from our Vico restaurant, we share the pizza, right, as a course.
Right.
And then we do the spaghetti with maple syrup, but we do a maple bacon meatball with that.
Nice.
It's that disgusting montage of stuff. And then, we do a cupcake with candy corn, and it's kind of like one of those goofy things, but people love it. They love it. It's a good time. It's a great night out. My staff dressed like elves in the movie and play, Giacomo. They all create this beautiful design, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
It's always been a great atmosphere whenever we've gone ourselves. So, since we are in the holiday season, what would you say is the ultimate holiday feast?
Well, Thanksgiving is the greatest family style thing. The keep it simple, the turkey, the ham, the gravy, the sweet potato, the mashed potato, the green beans, the broccoli casserole, keeping it simple, right? That's really for Thanksgiving. But then for, Christmas, like the Feast of the Seven Fishes, you get to create fun fish dishes at that time of year. But really comes down to everyone's individual likes and what they want. I know it's kind of vanilla to say that, but every family's different. There are people who won't ever do the feast of the seven fishes, but like do something creative and fun. Who cares what it is? Just to get around the table, get everyone to enjoy the holidays together, and to me that and the hokey pokey is what it's all about.
I'm not a seafood guy, but
Yeah.
I did do the seven fishes once, and
Yeah.
it was fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Exactly. It's fun to do those things.
So I like to end the interview segment by asking, is there a question that I did not ask you that you wish I did?
No, we covered everything, I think. Yeah, it's lots of good stuff. Lots of no, I think it's a wrapped up in a good nutshell, and I probably talk too much, but that's what it's about, right? It's about sharing those ideas
Yeah.
and thoughts and great stuff, all good things, all good things.
All right, but we're not done. I do have a little dessert prepared in the form of a word association game. So I'm not a foodie. I'm not a cook. There are plenty of things, cooking terms, I don't know what they mean. So I'm going to throw a few at you, and maybe you can give me a definition for each.
Okay.
So let's start with mojo or moho.
Moho.
Okay.
Yeah, so the moho, we do moho here a couple of different ways, but it's all about the seasoning that's in there. It's kind of like a citrus, oregano, garlic, lemony marinade that we use for like our pork. We'll do that as a slow cook pulled pork moho. So it's all the really citrusy and Mexican oregano in there, garlic, really good flavors, but citrusy.
Very interesting. What does braise mean?
Braised, slow cooking in basically covered in 3/4 liquid and slow cooking it. So the liquid actually is the part that breaks down the fibers and the meat, adds flavor to it, and creates a really nice texture.
Right. What is confit?
Confit. So
Oh, okay. What is
confit
confit?
is cooking something like, let's say, duck, right? So what you do is you take the duck fat, render it down, and then you cook it in its own liquid.
Okay. Now, in these next three, I know what the word means, but I don't know how it applies to cooking. So, infusion.
Infusion. So with food, well, there's a couple of ways you can go about that. So you infuse something into a protein, or you infuse something into, a chocolate sphere, right? How do you infuse that flavor in there? Well, you can take a
Right.
syringe and infuse it into that, or you can marinate it like our pork. We infuse a brine into our pork, gives it more texture, more flavor, and helps keeps the pork moist, right? So infusing that in there. The other way you can do that is by using a food saver, where you put the protein into it. You can put oils and garlics and herbs and seasoning into it and compress the air out of it, and that'll help infuse the flavor into it. Like we do a compressed watermelon during the watermelon season. So we'll just take basil, a little bit of salt, and put it into the cryovac bag and compress it by getting all the air out of it, and it infuses that flavor into there by getting rid of all the air. It's pretty cool.
Very interesting. How about reduction?
Reduction, it's taking a typically a liquid and heating it to the point that it boils down to 1/3 or 1/4 of where they originally started. That gives texture, that gives flavor, intensifies the flavor of whatever it is. It's like, let's say balsamic. Everyone uses balsamic reduction on everything. So you take the balsamic, a little bit of honey, and you go from a gallon to a quart, and you let it reduce down and thicken.
Okay. What does it mean to proof something?
Proofing. So what you want to do, you want to allow, let's say when you're proofing dough, you want the yeast and sugar to rise, right? You want to give it
Okay.
its time so that it rises and that everything gets activated in the bread. And most of the time it refers to bread or dough in some way, shape, or form. So you want to let it proof and let some of that gas out in that time. So the sugar and the yeast are going to react to each other with the flour, and then it's going to rise up because it creates a gas pocket in the bread. And then you want that to proof up so that when your bread is baked, it loses all the negative gas, but it creates a lightness to it.
Can you do that by just letting it sit somewhere?
Yep, in a certain temperature,
Right.
typically 8 degrees, so it'll proof in that. And sometimes you put a wet towel over that. That'll help sponge some of it out.
Okay. So here's what I've heard 1,000 times. I think it applies to like cutting, julienne.
Julienne, yep, it does, certainly does. So that's taking, it's about one, it's almost like creating a strip. So you're cutting it, you're rolling your knuckles to the point where it's as shaved as fine as you can with your blade, almost to the size of the blades, the blade size. So you're getting a nice
Okay.
julienne where, it's probably like 1/8 inch, maybe a little bit less, 1/10 of an inch shaved, long strips.
Do you do that often?
Oh, every day.
Every day.
Every day. Something is julienned every day. Tomatoes, lettuce, for cabbage, carrots for ramen, every day, all day.
Okay. What does macerate mean?
When you're taking, let's say, a fruit and an herb, and you're putting it and you're muddling it and you're macerating the flavors down by using a muddle to get all the flavors break, like when you're like if you're using mint and berries, you macerate that together. It's almost like pressing it together to break it down to get the flavors to come out for the cocktail.
Okay. All right. And finally, Roux, Roux.
Roux, definitely one of the staples in the kitchen and an old classic in French cuisine. So the different types of roux, there's a white roux, there's a dark roux, for depending on your application, right? It's a mixture of flour and clarified butter, and you could also make you could also cheat by using oil and flour if you don't want to
Okay.
go expensive butter, but you want to get make sure the butter is or make sure the butter is clarified where all the fat solubles are extracted, and they can use that fat for other things. But making the roux is by adding the combining the flour and the clarified butter together. It becomes a thickening agent. So you would heat that to the point of it starting to turn to like a blonde or brownish color, and then you add your liquid to that, and it would thicken it, like in a soup or a bechamel.
Okay.
Or sauce.
All right. Well, that was very interesting and informative. I appreciate it.
I appreciate the time. Thank you. I'm glad we got to finally get on board and
Yes.
do this. So very cool. I appreciate your time, and you have a happy Thanksgiving and a
You
Merry Christmas.
too. And thank you for venturing beyond the rotunda.
I appreciate that.
Take care.
Thank you.
I don't know about you, but that interview made me hungry. And hopefully it also enticed you to go visit 317 Main Street the next time you are in the Farmingdale area. And if that's something that's not in the cards for you, you can always pick up one of Chef Eric's cookbooks. At this time of the year, they make a great holiday gift. Chef Eric proved to be an interesting interview, and he seems to have a great philosophy on life and cooking. So I want to close by spotlighting one special aspect from the library. It's something called Canopy, which is a high-quality streaming service where you can watch award-winning movies, classic cinema, independent films, foreign films, documentaries, and educational videos, all of which will enrich and inspire. Best of all, you can watch these things from wherever, your smart TV, your mobile phone, your tablet. All you need is a valid library card. So stop in or reach out to our reference desk for more details. I want to wish everyone a wonderful holiday season. I want to thank Chef Eric for giving us the time. I want to thank Natalie and Brendan for editing and producing. As always, I thank Max Steele for our theme music. But most importantly, I thank all of you for continuing to listen. Please follow and subscribe. Share us with your friends and family. It's the best way to help us grow. Join us next time in our January episode, where I will be talking with former DC Comics editor and writer Bob Rozakis. And until then, be well and enjoy wandering the stacks.